This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 19th of June, 2023. Markets pulling back finally after nearly touching 4,500 in the S&P 500 last week. We had a bit more of a downbeat Asian session. And we have a U.S. holiday today, so we get a chance to take a breather here and see what this week is going to bring us. We'll look at that on the macro calendar later. We also preview that a little bit on Friday. But you can see on our Saxo equity theme baskets the pretty remarkable performance, to say the least, on the one-week basis there on slide two. For many of the baskets, the top performers being things like green transformation, energy storage, one of the Chinese baskets we have, gaming, cybersecurity, and bubble stocks. So this, what we think and characterize as a bubble, is ongoing. And as long as as long as these long end yields are anchored, and we, for example, don't see the Fed beginning to reaccelerate its anticipated rate hikes, this will continue until something comes in to stop it. And I'm not sure what that will be. One thing that it is not, Althea, and I don't know how much you want to address this, but it's been interesting. There was so much talk about when the Treasury was meant to rebuild its general account, as the talk was after the lifting of the debt ceiling issue, a massive amount of Treasury bill issuance needed to do that. There was an anticipation that this could sort of pinch liquidity in general. So far, this is not really bearing out. We saw a really big jump in the Treasury general account, some $86 billion, I believe it was. But at the same time, we're seeing this Fed repo facility, and I've got a little overview on slide three. It's a bit confusing, all this stuff, I think, for the uninitiated. It's a very complex system. But that facility, which is people using these repos with the Fed rather than investing directly in T-bills, for example, drew down more than that. So people apparently preferring to, now with the more availability of Treasury bill issuance, they can simply buy those Treasury bills directly. They might yield, and apparently they do yield slightly more than they're getting at the repo facility. So therefore, no massive liquidity pinch. So maybe this could continue without this particular issue driving any liquidity concerns.
Yes, John, I think that the key is about the issuance yield over T-bills, because the repo facility pays 5.05% in yield, while if we look at the bank reserves, it pays 5.15%. And so far, we had just few T-bill issuances that were offering above 5.15%. So that has kept the flow, the outflows from the repo facility and not from bank reserves, because obviously there is no incentive for bank reserves to buy T-bills at a lower yield than offered by the Federal Reserve. But things can quickly change. And if there is not enough demand on T-bills, that yield can move higher above 5.15%. And at that point, we might see Fed reserves, bank reserves, actually to bid for T-bills also. And that can cause instability in the banking system.
So the jury is still out, and this still could develop as an issue, I guess, is the message.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. All right, let's go ahead and stay with you. I think one of the interesting perspectives you brought recently is your discussion about where we are in relative terms with the U.S., the Fed hiking cycle and the ECB hiking cycle in terms of real yields. And you've got an overview there on slide five.
Yeah, on slide five, I put two graphs. On the graph that is on the left-hand side is real benchmark rates in the US and also in Europe. So basically what I've done is that I've taken the benchmark rate and I've subtracted the core inflation. And as you can see, what this graph is telling us is that while the Federal Reserve brought the real Fed fund rate into positive territory, so in restrictive territory, the ECB real deposit rate remains deeply negative, so in accommodative territory. So basically what that graph tells us is that the ECB is behind the curve and didn't do anything in real terms to fight inflation. So that translates in a more aggressive ECB, which is what we heard last week. And that will weigh on European sovereigns. And on the graph that you see on the right-hand side, I have the two-year shuts yields. And as you can see, last week, they broke above 3%. They are rising to test 3.13%. And if they break above that level, then they might continue to rise until 3.25, 3.35, which was the peak that we have seen earlier in the year.
Yeah, and then on the same front, apropos further hikes, we've seen a tremendous amount of further tightening priced into the forward curve for the Bank of England, which is expected to hike this week. And what's interesting there, and I have an overview on slide 4 of FX, and you can see that very powerful trend reading of plus 5 for sterling, broadly speaking, versus the rest of the G10 currencies and the Chinese renminbi. What's interesting here is the, of course, that last CPI print was part of it, but the other part of it was the very strong upgrades to the April payrolls and jobless claims figures, as well as nothing concerning on that front in May. So we've seen a huge repricing, 140 basis points, I believe it was, priced into the forward curve through what is now seeing the peak in February of next year, so even further out the peak there than elsewhere. And you're seeing for the next three Bank of England meetings, around 30 basis points priced for each of those meetings, meaning that there's maybe some sense creeping into the picture that the Bank of England might have to go with a larger hike of 50 basis points. In any case, CPI release is up on Wednesday, absolutely critical. The core, if we recall, for the April reading last month hit a new cycle high and a very big one at 6.8% versus like 6.2%, I believe it was expected. Expected 6.8% again at the core. The headline has been coming down, but it's still very elevated. And that core reading is critical. We also saw the very strong average hourly earning, or sorry, average wages picking up for the most recent data. The Bank of England needs to deliver sort of almost a mea culpa, some soul searching, some revisiting of their models and forward guidance on where they think inflation is headed, one of the most aggressive disinflationary forecasts of any central bank. So that's, of course, the proximate cause of sterling continuing to rally here. We see euro sterling near the lows, cable well above 128, and supportive of cable is the whole bubble and risk sentiment and weaker dollar here, also helping out, I think, this entire story, as well as the very weak Japanese yen, which with the Bank of Japan stuck in the mud here, and China even easing policy and further easing expected this week. Okay, so let's head over to the commodity market. There's some things going on there that we need to have a look at with, especially on the grains front. Ola, we've got the new climate pattern. El Nino, we've talked a little bit about this. What's your focus as we're heading into this week?
Well, most certainly, whether these the weather worries that we have right now, and which has been building over the past few weeks, whether they continue. We basically need rain across the Northern Hemisphere, not only in the US, which is the main driver of these markets, but also in Europe. The Black Sea area is also dry at this moment in time. So what we saw last week was quite a significant jump in the grain prices. We obviously know that they have been under pressure for almost the last year. So far on the chart, we're still down on a year, but it's starting they're starting to gain some of those losses. And initially, what I think we can just gather from the weekly speculative data, speculators have woefully been unprepared for this turnaround. So they've been covering shorts and entering into long positions, and a lot of that move last week was probably driven by that. That probably also the reason why corn was the best performer. We've had quite a big short position in the corn market, which you can see on the small inserts there on the speculative interest, and overall the net long across the six major crop contracts where we follow in the US has only just returned to a neutral position as of last Tuesday. So once this short covering long fresh longs is out of the way, we just basically need to see where we go from here. But we need rain, and we need to look at the weekly crop conditions report from the US, where you got one out tonight, and that should give us some further guidance.
All right, and then on the sort of more pro-cyclical front commodities-wise, energy and copper. These recent rallies here, dipping back a little bit, but we seem to be on a, at least locally, on an uptrend. But there's some more key work to do to really discuss a bigger breakout.
Yes, indeed. And some part of the move we saw last week, if not most of it, well, no, part of it, because the weaker dollar obviously also helped sentiment across the commodity space. But there's been some worries, some concerns about the additional or the prospect for additional stimulus in China. There was a big state council meeting on Friday where the market had been gearing up for some initial initiatives to be announced. They didn't come. So this slow stimulus rollout is just unnerving the market a bit, and that's why we're seeing prices come back down again today. But overall, the red line I put into Brent crude, that's basically the average line we've seen since 1st of May, and you can see we're just straight back to that line, and it just highlights the market hasn't got a clue what the next major direction is going to be. OPEC is supporting the downside through production cuts, and the upside needs the recession worries to fade and demand to start to live up to expectations.
All right. I moved a bit too swiftly on from a slide you had. I'll say a slide 7. You're discussing the 10-year Treasury yields. And I think there's a key thing there in that one thing that has allowed this recent boon to risk sentiment is that the long end has remained firmly anchored. Forward expectations for inflation remain firmly anchored. I think if that stops being the case, that would really quickly put an end to things. But looks like you're suspecting that yields could decline from here. What are your thoughts?
Yes, John, I'm going to take you on slide 6. And this is the 10-year U.S. Treasuries, how they traded since the beginning of the year until today. And as you can see, there is that bias for uptrending yields, which remains. We have 10-year yields now testing a resistance around 3.83%, and not today, but last week they did. And realistically, once that they break above this level, they can rise as much as 3.9%. And there is that level that is very scary, that 4% that we have seen in February this year. So the big question is, can 10 years U.S. Treasury continue to rise and actually test that 4% and create troubles for the equity market?
Yeah, and I think that would be the case if, or the trigger for that, proximate trigger for such a development would have to be economic data that rolls in that's proving hotter than expected and not cooperating with the recessionary forecast that this market generally has.
Exactly. But to answer that, John, I believe that it's important to see slide number 7, where we see that 10 years U.S. Treasuries have broken above their decennial downtrend. And it looked like they peaked a little bit above 4%, then to start to descend back towards their decennial downtrend. And that chart is telling us, I obviously put the 30 years kind of movement of 10 years U.S. Treasury yield, so it's very hard to see the very recent move. But basically, what it's telling us is that there is resistance, very strong resistance, around 3.9%. So the big take here, John, is that yes, U.S. Treasury 10 years yields might move towards 3.9%, but at that point they might find resistance and they will continue to descend. And this is obviously taking everything as it is now, right? That the Federal Reserve is not actively selling its balance sheet, that is not increasing the amount of the issuance volume of coupon bond sales. So, you know, like there is a lot of but if we look at the technical analysis, it looks like they might peak now, or they might have peaked already.
All right. A key trend line in place, though, to either or situation around that trend line for sure. All right. And then on the week ahead, macro calendar ahead, slide 10. Again, the big one is Thursday with the Swiss S&P expected to hike. Norges Bank from Norway also hiking. Bank of England, could they do more than the 25 basis points is the question. Most believe not, but something is priced in there. And then Turkish rate announcement, 13% plus expected on the rate hike for that central bank, or actually 11.5%, if I recall correctly now, to 20% for the Turkish central bank. And then the UK CPI on Wednesday. Again, today's markets are closed in the US, but it looks like we do get the latest housing market index figure. That survey has been bouncing back a bit. Watch for the Chinese rate announcement overnight, as well as the RBA's meeting minutes. All right, that is a wrap for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.